You might have thought it would never happen, but Switchcast is endorsing a transport company. Whether you're moving a rare collectible, a high-end sports car, or your personal luxury vehicle, Shaughnessy Overland Express delivers with precision, privacy, and respect. This isn't just transport, it's white glove care from pickup to delivery. For over 14 years, they've earned the trust of collectors, enthusiasts, dealers, and owners by offering unmatched service and personalized attention. You'll work directly with their experienced in-house team, ensuring a smooth and private experience without middlemen or surprises. Every shipment is protected with up to $3 million in cargo insurance, offering peace of mind for even the most valuable and rare vehicles on the road. In addition to their enclosed fleet, they've also established a trusted auto transport brokerage service, giving you access to a nationwide network of vetted open and enclosed carriers. Whether you need transport on a route they don't currently operate or their carriers are at full capacity when your schedule demands, they'll still get it done without compromising the Shaughnessy standard of excellence. Same professionalism, same personal touch, expanded flexibility. We are proud at Switchcast to endorse Shaughnessy Overland Express as the official transporter of Switchcast. Visit soexinc.com and tell them Switchcast sent you. Welcome to Switchcast Season 6. I always say welcome back, but this may be your first time listening, and if so, fantastic. Go back and binge all our old episodes. I'm your host, Doug Pabbitt, here with my co-host, Tyler Sanders. We are the automotive news and entertainment show that's not just for car people. I was on a Zoom or a phone call interview with the CEO of Cars and Bids this week.
Nice.
In preparation for our first main topic, and he was asking about our podcast.
He's like, never heard of you.
Well, we're not quite as popular as their podcast because they have the other Doug on theirs. Ah. But I said that we try to honestly steer away from the deep automotive nerd talk, and we're trying to be more of a like a news and entertainment show that's talking about current events and the business of cars and stuff that kind of anybody can find interesting and relate to, even if they're not into cars. Also, I'm not smart enough. I'm not Dan Doucette. I can't be a full-on car nerd and talk about Knut and valve pressure all night.
Did you sneeze? What?
Ethan Huffnagel is behind the scenes, occasionally on mic, never on camera unless he's fixing a problem. He is the executive regional producer, international executive producer. You've been upgraded.
Whoa.
Because we do have listeners in multiple countries.
Wow. We skipped national and went straight to international.
Mm-hmm.
Hope you enjoy your promotion, Ethan.
Holy smokes.
So is intranational the same thing as national?
I would assume so, right? Tyler?
No, it seems to make sense.
Yeah.
Based on my limited knowledge of the English language.
Switchcast is a podcast where we know what we're talking about despite evidence to the contrary. If you enjoy this podcast, please help us out with the algorithms. Like, subscribe, share, leave us a 5-star review, and tell people about it. Tell them how great it is, because it is great. Please support our sponsors and sign up for Patreon. We have exclusive topics on our Patreon. This week, it is the question come up with by our producer, what car made you fall in love with cars?
Which is not an easy answer. I don't have just like something, I guess if I had just a simple answer, we wouldn't be talking about it. But yeah, it's...
The other ones are more difficult. Ethan, what topics do we have coming up?
Coming up on Patreon exclusively, we have some doozies coming up, including the top three cars that should have never been made. Right?
Yep.
That's one of
them.
That's
a good one.
Giggling over there.
I'm laughing at your expert vamping.
Yeah, those was pretty good.
Going through my phone trying to find the topics.
Professional.
You know how we do it. And after that, we'll cover the best and worst car names.
Betty. Is this like car names that someone like Hank would name his Corvette?
Yeah.
Like the ones you see on boomer boards at car shows where they have a theme and they've named their car? Or is it like actual manufacturer names?
Well, I was going by, are there any good versions of those names?
I think my car names are good.
Do you want to give us a taste of what we're working
Gretchen
with?
Gretchen is my Corvette. Maroon 6, well, that's not really a name, but Maroon 6
is cool.
The 911.
No, these are car models.
Okay. All right. Manufacturer names. I have a few in mind already.
How awkward would it be if I rocked in with manufacturer name and Doug is over here like, Susan?
I was at this car show and the guy had the crying baby and on his boomer board,
he said his car's name was Doreen.
Listen, I am that boomer. I have a long story of why my Corvette's name is Gretchen. It's not just Gretchen 1, it's Gretchen 2. But it's a tribute to one of my good clients who passed away, and it was like he was an amazing, amazing man, and he had a Mercedes that was Gretchen 1, and then he replaced her with a newer model, and she became Gretchen 2. And then there was this girl I had a crush on when I was in gymnastics class, very, very young, and before I got insecure about being a boy in gymnastics class. And this older girl I had a crush on, her name was Gretchen.
How much older?
So I was like telling this story. I don't know. Right. So somehow that story morphed into that was how my first Corvette got named that. There's more into that. But anyway. It's coincidence. What's fueling this podcast other than hopes and dreams and delusion?
So I've got something different. I'm not actually drinking whiskey tonight. I'm drinking our Jelinek, I think is how you pronounce it, Fernet. It's like a bitter Amaro business that tastes like you have an Amaro and some port wine together. It's delicious. I assume it's just some roots and stuff that somebody over in Europe put in a barrel and decided we're gonna distill this, and it's fantastic.
I am drinking a pre-made margarita, but I've mixed it with habanero infused tequila, which Aaron made with some fresh habaneros we had. But nice. The mix was so strong that I had to dilute it like 4 different times. I made one margarita with it. I was like, flames coming out my ears. So I cut it in half and made 2 margaritas, and I still had flames coming out the top of my head. So I mix it with like a whole pre-made thing, and now it's actually has a nice level of spice.
She just did such a good job.
She did. It's actually very good. We also, our drinks are sitting on these cool wooden hand-burnt coasters from Ed Krakowiak, one of our big fans, but he sent us some new ones, and this one I have has a Corvette C4 on the front, and on the bank back says Hank, one of one.
Heck yeah.
Yes.
Oh, that's so good.
Yes.
Y'all are too kind.
Had the, and we call this our warm-up lap, and car people will get that. I had the pleasure of running around Mid-Ohio sports car course this week, courtesy of a regular guest on here, John Sabo, and I was reminded how important a warm-up lap is on our compound tires. Huh,
a little chilly.
Yeah, I goosed it a bit in a twin turbo rear wheel drive car over the rise going into Thunder Valley.
Ah.
You've driven Mid-Ohio. There's a lot of skid marks that go to the right straight into the wall. My car started that way and I countersteered and corrected it, but I got a little bit sideways on my warm-up lap, and that is not a good place to be sideways.
Oof, a little puckered.
Yeah, a little puckered, but all good. Thankfully, my reactions are still decent. So practice, and then next weekend, I'll be down at the National Corvette Museum Motorsports Park. I guess it's NCM Motorsports Park because they're technically not affiliated, just across the street from each other, but I'll be racing Lemons.
Oh, sweet.
Lemons, running our BMW E30. Hank will definitely be there. We get bonus points if we show up in Corvette attire.
Oh, you were made for this, Doug.
I was
made for this. You've been waiting your whole life for this moment.
There's going to be a bunch of posers trying to be like Hank, but there's only one Hank. We're going to have some fun. I guess I got to shave down to the mustache for next week.
I think so.
Yeah. I'll have a mustache experiment on my face.
Oh, so good.
That's a deep reference for those of you who have been listening for a while. Tyler's getting popular enough that he gets some shade,
yeah,
some mean tweets on our videos.
And some of the shade is funny.
Some of the shade is funny, but then he's also not popular enough. We got a good one this week. Tyler likes his LTT gear,
yeah,
and it always gets noticed by the people watching on YouTube. And so somebody called it out, like, oh, man, it's cool to see this. I was like, man, you haven't been around very long. This is Tyler's standard outfit.
It is. I have like 5 shirts. I wear them all the time on the podcast.
So then the commenter replied, who's Tyler?
It's my favorite. I have took a screenshot. I'm going to get it framed. It's beautiful.
Yep. Our sponsor, shout out to Sheffield Watches. They have some incredible new designs, releases coming out, and some old ones. They re-released the 24-hour watch, which we have on display on our desk here. And I'm excited to see them and try them out. Some really neat stuff. They have that blue carbon face one coming out. It's really neat. So, yeah, happy to endorse them. Some madness happening still in the auction world. And it's Ferraris again.
At least it's
Tyler,
not Porsches.
What's the latest hot thing that all of a sudden has gone up in value?
Apparently, 360 Challenge Stradales are going absolutely bananas. Doug, earlier this today, sent me a BAT auction result where one with like 5,000 miles or some crazy low.
4,000 miles, yeah.
Oh, God. Crazy, crazy low.
Silver factory stripe car.
$603,000.
For a when? Single clutch automatic flappy paddle.
When did they get here? When did like...
Today they got here.
Oh my God.
Today I learned that a Stradale is out of my budget now. And like last year I was going to buy a cheap one, cheap quote unquote, and stick swap it. And it's just like that dream is dead for me.
Yeah.
It died today.
Who knew that a 360 Challenge Stradale would be sitting in the same place in your mind as an F50? Just poof, gone. One thing, though. So right after you texted me this, I was on social media, and I follow some car accounts, and I had a dealership post about some car, and they're like, this is one of the best driving experiences for the money. Keep an eye out. These are so special. Or they'll say things like, we're never selling this, and then they sell it 6 months later.
Mm-hmm.
It's so disingenuous, it makes me want to vomit. Because everything is so expensive, and it feels like they're just like parroting this crap to all the uber rich that don't actually care. As all of these lovely enthusiast cars get out of our grasp forever. It's because like you can talk about a car and like it, 1,000% on board. But it's some dealers do it all the time, and it feels like they're just trying to pump markets so they can make extra money. So,
yep. Not for sale is the best marketing term ever on a car. Yeah. You know what's not for sale? The cars in my garage that I paid sales tax on. I'm a car dealer, and I paid sales tax on them. That's how you know I'm a real car guy. Playing that card.
The Sheffield brand was recently revived by Jake Turkbus, an owner of an original Sheffield all-sport diver he received from his parents in 1970 when he was just 11, beginning his love of watches. As an adult, Jay used his extensive expertise in product development and marketing to revive the brand that started it all. He set out to develop watches with a high level of quality and specification at a value price. His first effort, and a successful one on July of 2023, was the debut of the Sheffield All Sport Diver 1. It had the kind of build and movement that much more expensive watches use, and his debut price of $108 was equivalent to the $13 his parents paid in 1970. Since that debut, Sheffield has expanded to a wider range of automatics and chronos, many designed around vintage Sheffield dials of the 60s. The Sheffield Well of clever and unique design remains his inspiration, as well as maintaining the goal of high quality, very affordable range of automatic and quartz watches. Sheffield watches value on merit, not just price. I love mine, so get yours at sheffieldwatches.com and be sure to mention you found them on Switchcast.
We got a tip on a cars and bids auction scam, quote unquote.
Yes.
Right. And we've heard this story before. People have issues with Bring a Trailer, Cars and Bids, Manheim, Mecum. The scams are rampant in these auction scenarios. One of which went pretty viral a couple weeks ago, which was the guy at Mecum who was on video bidding on a car, and the auctioneer hammered sold and then took another bid in the same breath.
It was very strange because I didn't hear him do the, like, you know, going once, going twice. It's like he just had a brain fart for a second, went sold, and was like, actually, nope. It was a very bizarre video.
Yes. And we'll come back to that, actually. I think that plays into this discussion. But the one that we got sent was an auction on cars and bids. 2015 Dodge Challenger SRT 392 in a bright green color. Sublime.
So, Doug, that's a play on words, you know, because it's limes are green.
And most of the buyers are subprime. Subprime, like sublime.
Yikes.
Ooh, yeah. Coming to a street takeover near you, Challenger SRT 392. I did. This is going off topic here. Sorry.
We just started, Doug.
A dealer Facebook group I'm on. There was a video posted of this Dodge Charger that had gone off the road at triple digit speeds and crashed through a dealer lot.
Oh.
And he had flipped like two cars in the lot and landed upside Whoa. Down. And people were like, oh my gosh, is anybody alive in that? And the back door was open as if somebody had gotten out. I was like, nope. You know, five felons escaped unharmed from the Charger wrecked. I'm like, typical Charger activities.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's become its own meme. Anyway, this actually looks like a really nice car, and it's not to crap on people that like these and pay for them as opposed to stealing them. There's plenty of car people who own these and love them. We're just having fun here. So, anyway, a dealership was bidding on this car. And per their post on Instagram, which has been removed and of their own choice, no shady crap there. But anyway, they were bidding on the car. The next bid was $26,501 in terms of the bid increments. They did a fat finger and typed $36,501, which was well above the reserve and probably above market price, because essentially all the other bidders said, good job, you win.
Yeah, everybody's like, we're out.
He immediately commented, this was a mistake. I meant to bid $26,501. He did not tag cars and bids in his comments, but they do monitor auctions during the course of the auction and at the last minute. But the problem there was the bid was placed within the final minute of the auction. And for those of you who don't know how online auctions work, there's no sniping like there was in the old days of eBay. The clock resets to 2 minutes every time you place a bid. So there's no advantage to waiting until the last minute. But of course, you only have 2 minutes if you're bidding at the last minute. So he stated it was a mistake. It was too late. He tried to, essentially he called the seller of the car and said this was a mistake. He offered to make him whole for his seller fee, but Cars and Bids does not charge seller fees, so there's nothing to do there. And he contacted Cars and Bids. Cars and Bids' response was, too bad, so sad. You read the bidder agreement. And key thing to note here as well, when you bid, not only do you have to type in the number, but it comes up with a confirmation screen. And at the top, it says, here's your bid amount. Here's the service fee. They're 4.5%, I think it is. And then at the bottom, you click the button, bid this amount. So he did see the number three times before he confirmed. So, and again, I've made same mistakes. I'm not crapping on anyone here. It's just that there's a reason they have these confirmation screens. Bring a Trailer, P-Car Market, they all do the same thing. They want to make sure that nobody accidentally does this.
Which I do want to put out there, because maybe some of my comments later might make it seem like I don't believe this. This was an honest mistake. We all make mistakes. The two and the three are really close together on your keyboard. Last minutes of the auction, you might be feeling a little stressed. So, like, it is an honest mistake. But he saw the number, like, three times.
Oh.
Read your screen, bro.
Okay.
Anyway, continue to.
I bid $240,000 on a car instead of $140,000 this week.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It happens. Did you win?
No, that's the crazy thing. That's the crazy thing. And it was via text. I bid $240 on a car that had previously sold for $190. And I thought it was $290. And I literally just in my brain saw $290. I had bid $140 on it before. And so I bid $240 thinking it was $140 or whatever. And they came back at $275. So even though I bid $100,000 more than I wanted to, that still didn't get it done because the seller wanted so much money. And so I went back and I was like, I'll go to $250. And then I was immediately like, wait. No. I meant $150, $140, like going back to the auction. That's what I had bid previously. The car's not worth $80,000 more than it had already sold for. Now, they were not happy with me, but no deal was made. Nothing was agreed to. If I will say this, hand on the Bible, if they had come back and said, great, you got it, we got our deal done, because this was another dealer trying to take the car in on trade. So they're trying to make their deal based on my bid. If they had said, you own the car for $240, we'll bill you out, I would have said, I'm an idiot. Here's your $240,000. I will have to learn this lesson. I would have done that, but no deal was made. So bid's not binding until it's binding. However, on cars and bids, a bid is binding. It is.
Well, and I do appreciate that the dealer reached out and to the seller and said, hey, I'll cover your fees. Like they were pretty stand up about it. They're like, look, I made a mistake. You do got to own that. And it seems like for the most part at this point, at the end of the auction, they've owned it.
Sort of, but they still didn't want to come through with the bid.
Yeah, they owned it like 50%.
That's a tough thing, and we talked about this at our dealer because we see this all the time. We talked about Craig and Landreth, the dealer who didn't want to honor their deal because it was a number they didn't like. We had something happen today where somebody signed contracts, gave us a deposit, and then went, I think I paid too much for the car. I really don't want it now. And it's like,
but they signed a contract. Did you keep the deposit?
I wanted to, but we refunded it. Okay. I really...
That's probably the right thing to do.
Anyway, speaking of the right thing to do. Okay, so back to the cars and bids thing. Now, the accidental buyer in this case did post some reasonably inflammatory things about cars and bids right off the cuff. In their defense, they then removed them from their page because they said, listen... Yeah, we screwed up. We don't think Cars and Bids handled this the right way, but we don't want to be defined by this type of reaction, and I give them credit for that. That's a mature thing to do. We all kind of react really strongly, but I can see their perspective on it because they're going, we've bought a lot of cars on different auction platforms, Cars and Bids, Bring a Trailer, etc., and we didn't so much as get a phone call to try to work this out. From a relational perspective, it's an obvious mistake, but you guys are going to keep our $1,800 fee because we made a mistake. And so the bidder was not really happy about that. And I get that. People want their deposits back. So I talked to I had a good call with the CEO of Cars and Bids. And
dang, we got some pull here now at Switchcast.
Yeah. Right. Nice. And you know, he's gonna defend his side of things. And he did admit the one thing he did say, and we've learned this lesson too, is exactly what the bidder said, is they essentially have a weekly meeting where they go through, hey, what happened this week? What issues do we need to deal with? What can we learn from whatever happened? Because the car business and the auction landscape is constantly changing. And in hindsight, he said, and the key takeaway was, I wouldn't have changed my decision or the outcome, but we should have dealt with it quicker in terms of that customer relation part of things. But the long and short of it was, Cars and Bids kept the deposit or kept the buyer fee initially, and banned the bidder from the site because of non-performance. And that's standard across the board. Bring a trailer, P-car market. Anyone who bids on a car wins it and does not come through is banned from the site. Same thing with sellers. If they don't uphold their part of the deal, banned from the site. I get that. The other thing that the CEO said was this was somewhat of a perfect storm of a situation. If the accidental bid had come in an hour before the end, okay, we have time to deal with it and go, let's review it. Yes, that's definitely a typo. We can see how that tracks. Let's just reverse the bid and the auction isn't messed up. This one came in so late that they didn't have time to do anything. The reserve was met, the auction closed, and it negated anybody else's bid. So it essentially ruined this auction for the seller. And the seller was the one who had the most to lose in all of this.
Yes.
Not Cars and Bids, not the bidder. And according to the CEO of Cars and Bids, they did attempt to come to a mutually agreeable middle ground between the buyer and the seller of, okay, we know you didn't mean to bid 36K and that's probably over market. So where can we come to terms somewhere in between? And whether it was the seller or the buyer that didn't make the deal happen, a deal did not end up happening. So it goes back to their standard procedure of you didn't complete the deal, so you're banned and we keep your fee. They did decide after this meeting to refund the seller. They thought that was the right thing to do in this scenario because it was an accidental bid. About the same time, because that wasn't communicated quickly enough to the bidder, the bidder had filed a chargeback, opened a fraud case with their credit card company in order to get the money back anyway. And that does happen. I talked to P-Car Market about that when we had a non-performing bidder on our car. And I said, well, you guys don't have any damages here. You guys collected $5,000 and I'm out a car sale and now I have to start from scratch. And every non-completed auction, as we've talked about in the past, is damaging to my next attempt to sell it. So I said, well, why can't I get some of that money? And they said, well, we don't always get to keep it. Some people file chargebacks. We have to fight that, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm sure there's also another danger of if you start doing that, then people play the game of like winning their own auctions, shill bidding, and then going, oh, I'll just get my credit card fee back because they'll give it to the seller. So I understand why they don't do that. But I think there's definitely room for improvement in these auction situations to hold both the bidders and the sellers more accountable. But the one thing that the CEO said that I agreed with was that their goal was to uphold the integrity of the auction platform. And while the specific outcome may not have been pleasing to the bidder, and probably rightly so, I can definitely see where they're coming from, they have to present to everybody on the site that bids are binding and that sellers are real. Because if people, like the elections, right? If people start to believe that bids aren't real, whether they're shill bids or whatever they are, then sellers will not want to participate and other bidders will also not want to participate. So by this quote unquote heavy-handed policy, they are protecting the integrity of the overall auction platform for everybody so that people know when a bid comes in, it's a real bid and this transaction is supposed to happen. And the auctions work when people trust that this, that everything that's happening is real.
Well, and it's like if you go to any of these in-person auctions, if you sneeze and cover your nose and it counts as a bid, you've bought the car. And that's like a
very good point.
I want to, like I said before, eventually I was going to make some comments that made it seem like I didn't like understand the plight of the bidder, but it's like You had chances to look at your number. You had 2 minutes to make the decision. There was no one rush. Minute. There was, well, but even that, it's like it's you in, knew.
Yeah, I see what you, yeah.
There was a total of 2 minutes since the previous bid. You made a mistake, and that sucks. I think you should be thankful that you only made it out by initially losing that transaction fee or whatever that percent is that Cars and Bids takes. Take that as a lesson and move on because you're not going to actually purchase the car. Like, the seller is a real person. This auction was entirely screwed up, and as of recording of this episode, the car is still for sale on AutoTrader, mm-hmm. and they still haven't sold it. It's like...
Everybody is real people here.
Yes.
The buyer is a real person, probably of good integrity. They had good intentions to buy the car. They made an honest mistake.
100%.
Cars and Bids has to protect their auction platform at the expense of sometimes the favor of individual customers, even regular customers. I've been in that same scenario myself, and I've made the right decision sometimes and the wrong decision sometimes.
Yeah.
But you're right. You go to a wholesale auction like Manheim, you sneeze, you make eye contact with the auctioneer, you made a bid.
Yeah.
And if you don't like it, they will just say, okay, buy the car or you're banned. And like, this has happened to people I know where they did not even make the bid. They didn't intend to make the bid. There was no mistake. The auctioneer just pointed to them. And they bought a car and they're like, what do you mean I bought the car? Well, pay for it or you never come back.
Oof, that would be ridiculous. If you weren't moving, if you weren't doing anything, and for some reason the auctioneer got confused and you've got no recourse, that's ridiculous.
House rules.
Ugh.
House rules. Right? So as much as I think we can take sides with the bidder here as the victim and kind of pile on Cars and Bids, and I can, in one scenario, I can totally get behind them and go, that's crap. Like, from a relationship perspective, just friggin' rerun the auction, give the guy his money back, whatever. But from the other side of things, that scenario is so much more transparent than the in-person wholesale auctions that it's still whatever Cars and Bids, Bring a Trailer, P-Car Market, and the rest of them are doing, whatever scams, quote unquote, they're accused of, whatever issues they have with their auction platform, it is so much better than the in-person auctions. So much better. It's not perfect. It's not perfect, but yeah. So I don't know. Are we like Judge Judy here, right? We got to put the gavel down. Who are we deciding in favor of?
I think that from the relationship perspective, Cars and Bids did the right thing to refund the fee for the accidental bid. I think that they had every right to keep that amount of money on principle to uphold the integrity of the auction site. And it would have sucked. And it would have felt really unfair for the bidder. But I think that would have made sense. I think it was an honest mistake. Still a mistake.
Mm. Yeah. And I asked the CEO, I said, what would have happened if instead of bidding 36,501 when he meant to bid 26,501, he had bid 265,001. Mm. Like some number that's so crazy that nobody could rationally take that as a real bid. He said, well, that's a hypothetical situation. I'm like, I know that, but
he's like, I know. I like extremes.
But that my wife, who is our quote-unquote in-house legal counsel, because she went to a year of law school, she said there actually is a principle that applies there in terms of errors where, like, if you send somebody a contract that's $5,000 off on a $100,000 car, that can't be necessarily seen as a number that's so out of the realm of reality that it's an obvious mistake. So that could be potentially upheld in court. Like, well, you made the mistake, but it's... the guy could have negotiated 5% off. Whereas if you miss by 50%, even if you sign a contract, it's not enforceable because you can show that, like, this is an obvious mistake.
Gotcha.
And no rational, reasonable person could say that this was a real transaction or intended to be a real transaction. So I don't know what the name of that legal principle is, but I think that could apply here in to that question.
To your extreme question or the 36K?
to the extreme question, because 36K was more than market value, but not out of the realm for somebody who might really want the car and just put down a, put in a shut, let's shut this down.
Yeah. Bit. Like, I'm willing to pay this. I want the car.
Cause people
like,
do that all the time. They pay $5,000-$10,000 more. Or let's put it in percentages, right? 5 to 10% more than quote unquote market value in order to shut it down. So it's possible that they could have said, well, that's high, but within the realm of reason. And they didn't, to their credit. They said, no, that was a mistake. We believe it was a mistake. And that's why they decided to refund the guy the money. So everybody made mistakes here. Everybody owned up to it.
Yeah.
The bidder did. Cars and Bids did. Not everything was a perfect outcome.
If anything, I think the seller just got kind of screwed.
And that's exactly what Cars and Bids said as well. And the bidder, they all kind of agreed the seller got screwed. So maybe they should have donated half of the,
yeah,
the fee to him.
Hey, if you're looking for a 2015 Dodge Challenger, right now it's still an Auto Trader out of Cincinnati, Ohio.
Speaking of out of the realm of reality, yeah. Right?
Okay. Do you think this was an accident, Doug?
This wasn't an accident.
What's your opinion?
Okay, so on Cars and Bids, another green car. 2014 Porsche Cayenne. Nothing following that. No GTS, no S, no turbo. Cayenne, bleh.
But it's a manual.
6-speed manual. Make green great again.
Oh, it's great.
Jet green metallic, 64,000 miles.
It's hot.
It had previously sold on Bring a Trailer in 2021 for $51,000. Cayennes have gone down in value since then.
I would say that
this
feels
car
a little
sold for $125,500 for a 11-year-old base Cayenne.
All right, Doug, what's your take?
I mean, if anyone wanted to say this bid is outside of the realm of reality, you could say that is it. But there's two bidders battling till the end.
I have no proof something smells fishy. I don't. This is so outside of the realm of possibility. And yes, this is blown up on the internet. It could just be a couple of rich guys that don't care about $50,000 or $200,000. And they're like, I just want this thing. It just feels weird. Feels real weird.
Listen, Switchcast drinking game here for every time I've said CEO tonight. But on my call with the CEO of Cars and Bids, he said, quote, it is the wildest auction result I've seen in 11 years of being into the car business on any platform. But they maintain that this is a real result.
Which I feel like so, and this is, if I was in Cars and Bids position, the only way that I would say it is not is if there was unavoidable evidence that something was off. Like, they can't really say, well, it's a little weird, but whatever. Like, maybe they've been in contact with the buyer and the seller and they know for a fact, but like, it's all just, I don't know, it just feels weird. Just feels weird.
It's crazy, but so is $600,000 on a 360 Challenge Stradale and Bring a Trailer. So,
ooh, call back to the warm up lap.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
it's all insane. Makes me sleepy.
New sub-segment here. We're going to try it out. We'll need your submissions because we know you all hang out at car shows, but I heard something at a car show recently, and it is one of my favorite things to do is eavesdrop on people who have no clue, but they're trying to impress their friends about how much they know, kind of like what we're doing on the podcast. You don't know that we're wrong unless you know better.
We don't know we're wrong unless we know better, too.
Right. So, things overheard at car shows. My new favorite sub-segment, I was at Canton Cars and Coffee a few weeks ago, and there was a second-gen Dodge Viper there, and some guy was talking to maybe his dad, a friend, I don't know, but he said, effectively, the original Viper is basically a Dodge truck. They just reused a lot of truck parts they had laying around in order to save money.
I feel like I've heard this before, actually. This is like, oh, God. Oh, tell me you don't know how things work without telling me you don't know how things work. Holy moly. I also wondered, like, when people say they just reused a lot of blank that they had laying around, do they think they just have warehouses full of, like, window switches and crap that they just, like, cobble together and somehow get crash tested? Oy.
I mean, Ferrari's done that, but there's no truck parts on a Dodge Viper.
Isn't the engine, or no, they put the engine in a truck.
Well, I think that's the root of where that comes from. But it is not a truck engine. It shares architecture with it.
Yeah,
but the engine was designed or engineered by Lamborghini or with help from Lamborghini.
No, but it came from a truck, Doug. This is a little redneck.
It's a truck engine. It's the whole thing's a Dodge
truck. It was
truck.
Built in a shed in Michigan.
Not at the Viper plant on Connor Avenue. Anyway, if you hear crazy things at car shows, obviously we can't police this. You could just make something up and send it to us. But if it's good enough and it sounds good, then
we'll talk about it.
We'll feature you on the segment.
Switch Cars is the enthusiast dealership where we buy, sell, and consign only cars that we like ourselves. Check out our handpicked inventory online at switchcars.com and mention Switchcast for special pricing. You can find more information online at switchcars.com or come visit our showroom in beautiful Twinsburg, Ohio, where you can experience the Switch Cars difference.
Is the Grappler the new police solution for car chases? They've been using spike strips for a long, long, long time.
Dude, those spike strips used to get me in Need for Speed all the time.
Yikes!
Got to learn where the cops normally place them, and then you can skirt around.
Yeah, they are far more effective in video games than in real life.
Yes, when all that happens is my car stays the same level because they didn't model the car falling with its wheels gone, so it just continues straight with a bunch of sparks.
We've had pit maneuvers, which a lot of departments are not allowed to do anymore because of liability and lack of training, which I got to say, I'm personally a fan of pit maneuvers when done successfully. They are satisfying to watch and very fun to perform, but quite dangerous. I've watched, I don't know, hundreds of videos where they have gone wrong because they were done wrong. Not because of the pit maneuver itself. But the Grappler is a device that it's basically a net that is stored in the front of a police car, one specially equipped, and it's stored in like the ram bar up front.
Yeah.
And they deploy it. It shoots out and grabs the rear axle, rear wheel, whatever it can get its grapples on, and just drags the vehicle. And so the cop car comes to a stop, and I guess if the cop car is sufficiently bigger enough
it can,
than the vehicle grapples, it ends the chase just like that. So all they have to do is get up close to the rear bumper, which in most police chases they can do. It's much harder to actually get in position to do a pit maneuver because seasoned criminals will just dodge right, dodge left, and then the cop can't execute a pit maneuver.
No, never mind.
But you could do this in traffic. There's so many more places you can do this that you can't do pit maneuvers or spike strips.
Well, I think you'd want to be, like, with a pit maneuver, you could send a car careening into traffic or pedestrians. This isn't a Mustang running a Cars and Coffee. Come on.
Correct. Brings new meaning to the words dragnet.
Ooh.
Yes. Just thought of that. So there's a few different stories out there. We found one on YouTube from, I think, last year where Tempe police accidentally grappled the wrong car, but we've seen cops pit maneuver the wrong car. There was one where they pit maneuvered an unmarked police officer that was like on his way to a call.
Nice.
And they pit maneuvered him and he flipped on his lights as he was like facing the cop that pitted him. And he's like, what's the deal, man?
Oh, so good.
That's not an argument against the Grappler because people can spike the wrong cars. They can pit the wrong cars. Heck, cops friggin' spike the wrong cars all the time.
Well, do they still use spike strips?
They absolutely do.
Oh, I thought they were like outlawed or something. I don't know.
No. Heck, half the ones I use, they accidentally spike the police officers that are chasing the perp. The perp drives around them, and then two cop cars get spiked because they don't communicate well enough. Anyway, lots of uncoordinated police chases. The ones I watch on YouTube, I swear, it's like 7-year-olds playing peewee soccer where it's just swarm the ball.
It kind of is.
But
man, these spike strips look scary.
Yeah. From Fox 9, the Grappler was safely deployed for the first time in Minnesota. during it stopped a fleeing vehicle during a police pursuit. Eagan police successfully used the new tool to end a pursuit after a driver refused to stop for red light on Friday, August 30th. The female driver was apprehended after a brief foot chase and faces multiple charges, including fleeing police. Note on this one, too, that it was a pickup truck hauling a U-Haul trailer, which if any of you have ever been stuck behind people in U-Haul rentals or U-Haul trailers, I am convinced that it's like white trash people winning the lottery. You get a bad driver with a U-Haul trailer and it just magnifies how terrible people are at driving.
Oh, well, because they're not used to driving with a trailer. That's an
entirely tiny trailer.
It's still something else you got.
Even the rental trucks. Ethan, our producer, added the small U-Haul rental truck this week, and I'm like, he did a bad job. Half a mile away from you.
But did you see me back it up into the driveway, though? Yes. That was money.
That was money.
Was it a little bit of money or a lot of money?
No. I mean, outside of the tree that Doug had to stand on top of the U-Haul to move a branch out of the way for.
What?
There's nothing I could do to prevent that.
But The one that is raising ire from a lot of people is a Detroit, Michigan police chase, and this is courtesy of Fox 2 Detroit. Police were tracking a stolen car, and Livonia police, who have the new grappler, responded and deployed the grappler on the freeway near Lavon, Michigan. And it looks like a Chevy Malibu, and they successfully grappled the car, but then the car tried to drive away. And it's a front-wheel drive car, so they still had power to the drive wheels because they were not caught up in the net. And they grappled so hard that the rear axle just came right off of the car.
Whew. Oh. Ugh.
So this was a win for cops, and they caught a thief, but the comments on this are hilarious. Quote, "This seems really dangerous to everyone on the highway. Would love to know the budget blown on indulging cops' Batman fantasies."
It is kind of like a James Bond or a Batman thing. A little go-go gadget.
Quote, "It's not really fair to the owner of the car that the police destroyed it. Possibly the car could have been recovered, or the police could have chased until the car ran out of gas."
So I got to be honest, I'm watching the video right now, and they are like, they didn't grapple the rear axle and it just pulled the axle off. Right now, the cops are just sitting in the middle of the road while the person who stole the car tries to yank away from the grappler device. So they keep backing up and flooring it and going forward. And after like the third or fourth time, the rear axle pops off.
Yes.
So it's not like...
There's a problem here in that people are blaming the police for criminals' activity. It is a stolen car, stolen by the criminals. They have likely already damaged it, probably run into and rammed the police already. And then they're saying, oh, well, the police damaged the car. Just wait for the criminal to run out of gas. Have you ever watched any police chases? Now, I will say, we're going to talk about grappler versus spike strip versus pit maneuver. I am not going to cite any studies because I don't need to. I have watched hundreds upon hundreds of high-speed police chases and compiled my own data.
Yeah, Doug,
this
source
is what
himself.
I do. And I can tell you, spike strips do not work.
Yeah,
probably
so cool.
One out of 10 is successful in the hundreds of videos I've watched. Two out of 10 at least are successful in spiking the police cars directly behind the perp. 3 out of 10 are successful. This is certified stamped data here. 3 out of 10 are successful in the police officer who is throwing the spikes at a moving car that's going a high rate of speed with the death wish at putting the officer in harm's way. And often the car drives directly at the officer. Spike strips are terrible. I think they should be completely outlawed because they're not effective. The risk reward ratio is not there at all.
it's way better when you're parked on the side of the road just waiting for that street racer to come up and you press a button on your keyboard and one just pops up in the middle of the road. That's what I'm talking about. We need that technology.
Oh, my gosh. Another comment. Quote, I see the vision, but, like, does this come out of the police department's wallet or the person who stole the car? Because I don't think I'd like to get my car back but have no back wheels. Bro, you've never had a car stolen, have you?
Isn't there some level... If my car was stolen and, like, really kind of abused, I'm not sure if I'd necessarily want it back.
You don't want it back.
It would feel... You don't know what they've done. You don't know what you will uncover a month or a year from now, but also somebody has, like, violated your thing.
People only want their stolen cars back from a sense of being made whole. You are never made whole. It is never right. They are always damaged, and it costs more to get them back, personal experience, than... Do not get them back. However, like, stop blaming the cops. The cops are... Would you like them to just let the perp go? Eh, just take the stolen car. They'll ruin it anyway. Another quote. So dangerous and so much damage just to catch someone and provide literally no justice while endangering everyone around them. Honey... Have you watched police chases like I have? Those are dangerous.
Ethan, pit can you
maneuvers.
Clip that?
Let's go to pit maneuvers.
Honey.
I've seen so many terrible accidents as a result of pit maneuvers. Not the pit maneuvers are to blame, but cops aren't trained in these. They're doing them too far forward, so they're catching the rear wheel and flipping the cop car. They're doing them into oncoming traffic over and over again. I've seen this. Yeah. They're doing them when traffic is around, causing... accidents, crazy rollovers, and, you know, we could say, well, we don't care about the perps, but human life is human life, and maybe there's innocent victims in the car who didn't want to be in the car for these police chases. That happens often. There's children in the car sometimes. Guy goes crazy, and he's with his baby mama and his, you know, another dude's baby. stereotyping Hi. Here. But, like, this is the safest way to end a pursuit, and the quickest. Like, to say this is endangering everyone, like, these people, these commenters don't live, they live in an alternate reality. Another quote, what's the point of doing this to a stolen car that belongs to someone else? There's literally no reason to destroy a car that you're trying to recover.
I gotta admit, I was supremely skeptical about this because it seems really dangerous and like something could go wrong. But the axle popped off after like three or four tries. Like, okay, nope. Like, that's kind of the fault of the perp in that scenario. This might actually be all right. I was going to try to tell you this sucks, but like, I think it might actually be better than just letting the perp go and continue driving like a maniac and potentially harm somebody
100%,
else.
100%. 100%. The departments are so concerned about their CYA, and rightly so, that I've seen where a car was driving onto an on-ramp for oncoming traffic on the highway, and the cop had an opportunity to pit them, but he had not gotten authorization to do so yet. At that point, I'm thinking, if I'm the cop, I don't care. This is about to escalate to an insane level, driving into oncoming traffic on a highway. I don't care if I lose my job. I'm putting this guy into the ditch. It doesn't matter how I do it or if I wreck out doing it. It doesn't matter. So to me, this grappler thing is, it's technology that's been around for a while. And I don't know why it has not become ubiquitous. It seems to be so easy to use, so incredibly safe on a relative scale.
Well, and I think that's the relative is important because there's still a chance that something could go sideways. Somebody in oncoming traffic could not notice what's happening and swerve and do something stupid. But still, in the realm of all of the potential ways to de-escalate a pursuit, this seems to be purely for de-escalation instead of an escalation for the purposes of ending.
Exactly. You are slowing people down. If you spike them, my studies show that they don't slow down. They keep driving at the same speeds with less traction, which is more dangerous. Cops, in general, aren't trained very well at driving, and especially not in high-speed pursuits. So the longer a high-speed pursuit goes, the more dangerous it is to civilians, not just because of the perp and their desperation to get away, but also the cops' adrenaline. And often they're in Explorers with snow tires. Like, they're not properly equipped performance vehicles. They do not have the right equipment to be doing this stuff. So if you can just bring something to a stop, like, you hit the nail on the head. It's de-escalation. I think every friggin' department should have this. I think this is throw your spike strips out, not into the road, like chuck them into the trash.
Leave them in Need for Speed.
Don't have to worry about the liability and the training with pit maneuvers. They're still cool, but
honestly, I think spike strips are still cool. They're dangerous as all heck, but boy, are they sweet. It's a strip of spikes, Doug, to pop the tires. Oh,
lame.
That got my Porsche 911 Turbo so much in Need for Speed.
Yeah. So I'm all about this.
I wanted to fight you, but this is legit.
Okay.
I'm on board.
Let's go to Plate to Sample, our most popular game ever. Awesome sign up here for those of you watching. And this is brought to you literally and financially by Solon Spine, solonspine.com. It's not what you think. It's not Soul and Spine. It is Solon, Ohio. They will get you straightened out if you are not straight, crooked, yeah, whatever's going crooked on in your back, shoulders, etc.
Knees and toes. Knees and toes.
Okay, so let's do Plate to Sample. This is a game where we will name a vanity plate. Ohio has renamed them special plates because, you know, people don't want to be accused of being vain. But let's be honest, they're vanity plates. And instead of trying to guess what it means, because that's usually patently obvious, we will try to guess the vehicle that it is on. How well can we identify stereotypes?
I will say last time, I think I had an improvement. A couple weeks ago, I was a little rough. It was embarrassing. I had to apologize after the podcast. I almost got fired. It was a whole thing. Very bad.
Okay. Well, Tyler, fire away with your first one.
All right. For you, Doug, this comes from John Z. To Mars.
To Mars. Tesla.
Yes. There
it
is.
Because they have SpaceX.
Yeah. Nice.
All right.
Look at that.
Okay. This one, I apologize, people watching. We always have photos of the plates. I did not get photos of these because I was driving, but they were too good.
So these are all lies.
No, they are real. I will pull them up on Carfax is kicking me out. I got to do two-factor authentication.
Are you, Doug?
Yes. So I will pull it up to prove that they are real and that they correspond to the vehicle. And
all right.
Yes, they are real. I can't spell them. All right, the first one is PRVJET from Ohio, Private Jet.
This is an AMG S-Class.
What the frick?
What?
How?
What, did I get it?
Well, technically, yes. That is what it comes up on Carfax.
Pack it away, boys.
But it was on a Porsche Panamera.
What? How did I get what?
Carfax, 2023 Mercedes-Benz S-Class. S500, not an AMG, but it might have had the AMG package.
Oh,
that
my gosh.
That is scary. Woo-hoo. Good.
Boy, I got some dusty shoulders over here. This is kind of weird.
Porsche Panamera, private jet.
Oh, amazing.
Yep.
All right. I got to be honest, Doug. This next one, I'm going to need you to explain it to me when we're done here because I don't get it, but I feel like you might have seen this plate at this point.
Okay.
This is Paul P. Thank you for sending this in. MS8. Like MS space 8.
MS 8.
It might not have an actual meaning, but the car it's on makes me feel like you might know.
JBL MS-8 digital sound processor?
Ah, no.
Is it another EV?
No, it's a BMW Z8.
MS-8.
It is black with a red interior.
Fisker designed it, so MS-8.
It might literally mean nothing, but this was on a Z8, and I was like, Doug might have actually seen this in your sleuthing for one. It's black, so not your preferred color. But
okay. All right.
Must mean nothing then. All right.
Womp. Next one for you, which I saw driving. I will pull up the Carfax to verify.
I don't even think I need to do any more.
The number two, THDRLA, tooth drilla.
Oh, so he's a dentist, or she. This is going to be a Lexus.
No.
Oh. What else would a dentist drive? An Audi, like, RS5.
No, but, like...
That kind
great
of
great guess, wrong manufacturer. It is a BMW 8 Series M850i.
Okay. Those are pretty sweet.
They are.
They look good.
They do look good. I'm not a modern BMW fan, but BMW has knocked it out of the park with the new 8 Series
for
Grand
some reason,
Coupe, whatever.
It's the only one that doesn't have massive kidneys.
Yes.
Like overly massive. Like they're big, but it's a big car.
Yep.
Next up for you, Doug, coming from Chris S. Crowds. With a little heart on
Mustang.
It. Yeah. Can you?
So sorry, he sent that one to me too. I saw it. No! And I was like, I got to use this at some point.
No.
But I would have got it anyway. Heart crowds. Come on. That's a Mustang.
I didn't know that in Texas you could get a heart, like a symbol on your plate.
You can in California too, because I
really?
Saw an old Alfa Romeo at a car show that had I Heart AAA.
Oh, that's amazing.
It's really good. Another Ohio plate. This was a submission. Not 5-0.
It's a Mustang. Not GT. It's like an EcoBoost.
No. I see what you did there. It's not
5-0.
Not 5-liter.
But like a Crown Vic or a Chevy Caprice or a Dodge Charger.
Ford Police Interceptor.
That, yeah. Oh, the
Taurus
one?
Explorer. No, the Explorer Interceptor.
Yeah. That's a good plate. I like that.
That is a good plate.
John A. brings you the next one. I'm bougie. This has a pink bedazzled plate frame as well. Because they're very bougie.
A Bentley?
No. No. I don't think they're actually bougie.
I really don't know. I think pink bedazzle. Jeep?
No.
Jeep Wrangler?
No. It is a Mercedes entry-level compact SUV.
Oh, you pulled the me.
I did.
Yeah.
I was like, this is perfect. Doug will never guess.
Ah, shoot. Okay. All right. This one comes to you from Chase McIntosh via Instagram. This is a good one. Massachusetts plate. K-Truck.
Oh, is this on like a Subaru Sambar or the Honda Acty or...
No.
What are the K-Truck options are there? Is it on a Maverick? Are they trying to make a joke?
Nope.
Okay.
Well, yes, they are trying to make a joke, but it's on a Ford Bronco.
Oh,
the full-size one.
Not a...
The fenders on this thing are bigger than an actual K-Truck.
Oh, my goodness. All right, Doug, this last one. I need you to prepare yourself.
Okay.
Because I wasn't. It's I suck toes. So what kind of person would drive?
Is that a Chrysler K car?
No, but that would be good.
LeBaron.
No. That would be, it's not that. It's much more modern.
Do you know why I guess that?
Why? No.
Isn't that George Costanza's thing?
Oh, I don't actually remember.
And he had a LeBaron that was owned by John Voight. I shouldn't make here, but okay, I haven't the faintest idea.
It's a Volkswagen Passat.
What does that have to do with sucking toes?
No, I guess that's just the vehicle of choice for a potential toe sucker.
Okay. Okay.
It's rectangles and squares here. Just because you drive a Passat doesn't mean you want to suck toes. But if you want to suck toes, probably drive a Passat.
All right. This one comes from Robert on Instagram, PRERNR, pre-runner.
Pre-runner. So the first thing that comes to mind is like a Plymouth that came out before the Roadrunner. Am I entirely off? Like it's a pre-Roadrunner. I'm entirely off base.
I'm taking your car guy card away.
What?
It's a 93 Ford F-150 that's built like a pre-runner.
What is that?
You don't know what a pre-runner is?
No.
Oh my gosh, internet, please tell Tyler who I've
the pre-runner is a Baja
that
truck?
I've keeping his car guy card that I took away.
I don't, it's a Baja truck.
Yes.
That, I mean, these things look amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know they were called pre-runners though.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah. This one from Motor Trend with a Ranger looks dope. This looks like a lot of fun.
Is that five or is that four?
That was five.
That was five. Oh man, but I have one more good one. I have one more good one. Somebody bet a t-shirt on this, on what you would guess. Well, they said Ethan.
They bet what Ethan would guess?
Well, I think they met, who's Tyler? This one
Ethan,
is from
I'll send
Brian
you
Kidd.
The screenshot to put up when he says that.
I don't want to lose this one because I'd have to send a t-shirt to England. This is a British plate. Am I too gay?
Huh. Hmm.
Ethan, what's your guess?
Yeah, who's Tyler? Ethan, what's your guess?
I'm asking you, Tyler.
Oh, he doesn't have a mic. This is is that on? Hmm. And it's, you said it's a UK plate?
Mm-hmm.
Is it on a like a Twingo?
A what?
A Twingo, like a Renault Twingo or
no.
Whatever? Okay. What is it on?
Mercedes C250 Blue Tech Wagon.
Oh.
A respectable car.
A respectable car.
Brian bet me a t-shirt that you would guess Tesla.
Oh, well.
But Tesla, in the U.S., Tesla drivers don't have that reputation. Subaru drivers do.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's what screwed me up is I'm like, what is considered that type of vehicle in the U.K.? I don't actually
know.
That
is a great question. We don't know. Maybe they're left-hand drive cars. I don't know. Well, that was a fun game. I don't know what the score was, but it doesn't matter anyway. Thank you for joining us for Switchcast with Doug Tabbitt and Tyler Sanders, produced by Ethan Huffnagel. Switchcast is an automotive entertainment and opinion show, and nothing we say should be taken very seriously. We do not give tax, investment, legal, emotional, or professional advice, and the only licenses we hold are driver's licenses. The opinions expressed on this show are exclusively held by the people pontificating at that moment and do not reflect the values of our producers or sponsors. Our theme music is provided by Emily and Ivory. You can stream their full album on Spotify or SoundCloud. If you like this show, you can stream it in its entirety on your favorite audio podcast platform. Check out switchcast.live for more info.